There's been a lot of drama and controversy surrounding this prediction by the Mayans that the world will end in December of this year. They've made movies about it, books about it. And you know, there's always been thousands of predictions of ends of the world, and I think most people kind of smile at the idea, including me. But I actually have been feeling something very, very strong recently, and it may just be me and the people around me, so I don't mean to project this as a world event. But I really am seeing something going on that's not unlike a title of Adi Ashanti's book. It's called The End of Your World. And there's just such a strong feeling in the people that I am surrounded by and people I am peripherally related to, whose lives are changing, and somewhat dramatically. Things are really turning a corner, changing direction, stopping what they used to be to turn into something else. And I see it so much and hear it so much, even from people here, that I'm beginning to think there's something that you might call atmospheric or astrological, even, that things are changing. You can even sort of look at, if you look at the newspaper, the global sense of something's going on. And it's hard to know what it is. It's hard to pinpoint it, and it's also a waste of time if you're trying to look at it in a global sense. But it's not a waste of time if you're looking at it personally, in terms of your own inner transformation. It seems that there is an implication in all of spiritual work that may or may not be true, but it definitely feels true to us as we go through it, that there's something called process. That somehow we are in a process or being processed or processing things ourselves toward some kind of goal. And probably the best description of that goal has always been words like liberation, awakening, enlightenment, becoming freer, becoming happier, becoming more open. And certainly spiritual practice seems to buy into that idea that we're all working towards something or being worked towards something, that there's an end goal here. And Rudy talked about it and essentially called it a process of death and rebirth. Death and rebirth imply cycles in our experience as human beings that cause us to die in some level and come back. And a number of people have brought up the image recently for me of the pruning of a bush. How important it is to cut a bush back, sometimes almost to nothing. If you see our rose garden in Los Angeles in the winter, it's just a sad-looking series of branches. And then in the spring, it comes back always bigger than it was before. And Rudy used that image a lot as well, that we often have to be pruned as people, cut back. Part of the dying process or the experience of dying, that you are in some way diminished, that you are somehow less than you were before, or things fall away from you. And the positive spin on all of that is to make room for something more. So if we are coming to the end of our world, personally, globally even, but let's keep it personal. If we're coming to the end of our world, and we understand this idea of process and believe in it, then it's all to the good. Because we are making room for something. We are pruning. We are becoming available to something new and perhaps, in the best spin on it, something bigger and better. Which, following the cycle of human existence, will keep happening until it doesn't. And when it doesn't, when the final pruning takes place, when the bush is pulled out of the soil, the idea that this cycle of death and rebirth has been so continuous, one likes to think it will continue even after the end of our real physical material self. One of the things that happens in the achievement of the goal, let's call it liberation and awakening, is that one experiences something, or one knows something, or one becomes one with something that, you can use the word, and it's not a good word exactly, but let's call it transcends death and rebirth. What you come in touch with is this eternal presence. Something that they say cannot be born or die. Something that escapes death and rebirth. In a non-material sense, let's just call it a psychological sense or a narrative sense, what takes place in death and rebirth is a constant reworking of the same elements. What takes place in awakening is the falling away of those elements. Let's call those elements narrative, story of your life. When the story of your life falls away, especially before you die, when you are liberated before you die physically, and you experience liberation and enlightenment and freedom and awakening, all of that is a freedom from death and rebirth, or from the story that dies and gets reborn. Because really, what death and rebirth are about is your personal sense of self. The process that you're going through leading toward awakening and freedom is slowly realizing that this person that you think you are, for moments, especially during the act of meditating, just isn't there. So you have these moments, these glimpses of, oh, I'm not there. There's no me there. And it's very liberating. It's very freeing. And then it comes back. And then you meditate again and it goes away for a bit. And then it comes back. And you keep doing this. And you keep doing this. And what happens is you start to feel, if I could sit longer, deeper, be more present, I would be less and less caught in the narrative. And so people like to sit for hours, just basking in not having a life story, being free of the drama and the sadness and the pain and the we'll put the other side as well, being free of the journey between elation and pain and the up and the down. You just let that fall away. Or it just falls away by itself, and for a period of time called Satori, it's like, oh yeah. And it's so beautiful, and it's so wonderful, and it's so exceptional that one makes great efforts to sit still and experience it, if you know enough to try. And the process appears to be longer and longer and longer periods of that. So the death and rebirth of the narrative starts to expand into more and more periods of no narrative, no story, just being, just being. And the thing that's so great about that is that it feels like what you want to have all the time. And then, if you're lucky or blessed or whatever you call it, the narrative completely falls away. You, as you know yourself, fall away, and what's left is this pure being. Pure being. But if you're still in a body, when that happens, you're still in a body. Things happen to you. Life goes on. You go on. You still get sick. Things still take place. People that have been part of what you love disappear. Things change in a second. There's still pain. It's all still there. It's just not yours. It's really not yours. It just is. It just is. And this is an extraordinary part of spiritual life. Because all of the practicing of letting go of the story no longer is necessary. All of the practice itself is no longer necessary. There's only this. And yet this still has human aspect, universal human aspect. It still has joy, it still has sadness, it still has experience. One of the best ways to describe it at some core element is as a deeply compassionate being. And it's deeply compassionate because it feels everything. Rather than being freed of your own suffering, you experience the suffering of the world. Rather than being separate from the joy of your being, you experience the joy of all being. That's what you are. It's what being is. There comes along with that this experience of depth. And what you realize in the experience of being is that most experience is a surface level reality. And that if you dive deep or just sit still, there is this enormous depth of composure, of stillness, of awareness, of truth, and all of this stuff going on, joy and suffering, all happening, this whole thing happening. And there's no you it's happening to. There's no you that are at this core of it. There is just the happening itself and this body. And this body is the kind of interface between what's happening and this depth of being. And this interface is still experiencing stuff. And as long as it experiences stuff, there will be life as we know it. There is life. And that life is still the experiencing of the elemental truth of human awareness. It is a very powerful thing. I would even begin to say that awakening and liberation and enlightenment is a much more powerful state of being than normal human being, because in our little individual drama, as much as we feel, at least it's encased and encapsulated in our own personal drama. It doesn't have the bigness yet of universal experience. You can read a newspaper about the shootings in a movie theater in Colorado, and you can turn the page. You can get totally caught up in it, and yet somehow it's just excitement on the surface. When the you disappears, the suffering of that is part of your being. The suffering of every event in the world is part of your being. What you learn through the rest of the process of awakening is how to suffer and burn and love and be consciously. Which means you sit in the middle of your own drama, you sit in the middle of your own suffering, of the suffering of this elemental thing. And you go, The old Zen parable is of the monk who goes, aso, aso. Everything that comes into his life is so big and painful and miraculous, all these things happening. And he begins to understand it's just more stuff. And he just goes, aso. Great elation, aso. Terrible tragedy, aso. He's not being detached from these things. He's just being deeply aware that this is what it is. This is what it is. My own experience, certainly in the past month or so, which has been tumultuous on many levels, for the Bruce character particularly, and even letting go of that, the body is reacting to external events, personal and extra-personal, meaning my family, people around me, people I love, so many people going through great and terribly difficult things. And there's a whole part of me that engages it and feels the suffering and the pain. And there's another part, and this is the part that's evolving, which is going, okay, this is what it is, this is life, this is it, this is how it works. And there is in that a kind of incredible conscious burning. And Rudy talked about burning all the time. I never understood why, really. But now I really do understand it, because the burning is so powerful. And I thought about it this morning, and all I could think about was the story in the Bible, and I knew I would get the names wrong, so you can tell me, Absalom, Meshach, the three guys who have to be thrown into this incredible fire. Do you remember their names? Abednego, Meshach?
Shadrach,
Meshach, and Abednego. They're being thrown into a fire, and these are very pure souls. They are very pure souls, and the guys who are building the fire for them are all dying building the fire, because the being so close to the fire is so potent. And these three brothers are led to the fire, and to me they are these deeply elemental awakened entities, and they walk into the fire, and nothing burns. They just stand there, because all of the narrative, all of the stuff around us is burned off. It's just burned off by life. And what remains is pure and unburnable. Aha. 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 And I know that this week I have found myself sitting. I have not sat to work with this stuff, I just find myself sitting. And in the middle of all of this drama, there's this thing that just goes, it's just the being. It's the pure being. The fire is raging around. The fire is consuming. I can feel parts of the body, if you want to call it that, if not the physical body, the idea of a body, the idea of a self, the idea of a person, all of these things are burning. And I'm just sitting there going, and I mean, I don't like it, I have to say, and it's really uncomfortable, but it is real. And this ability to find yourself in the middle is such a gift. And that gift comes from everything we're doing, which is sitting and practicing this being. The practice of spiritual life has the same value as the reality of spiritual life. It's the same thing. It's just, it's no longer practice at some point. It's just doing, being. Life is very powerful, but it really is, if there's a process, the process is to free us into being and to deeply appreciating the wonder and the mystery and the horror and the brilliance and the joy of being, all at the same time. And either you're willing to go through this consciously, or you're dragged into it screaming and crying and yelling, doing all that stuff. Ultimately, it's to appreciate what is. It's to appreciate this. And you're not going to use this to get into pure bliss or pure release from all that is, because I think that's the driving illusion. I think that's the thing that gets people to practice. Ah, if I do this, I'll just live in a state of endless bliss. I think, and maybe I'm wrong. You know, if I'm wrong, then I'm wrong, then maybe bliss really is the ultimate thing, and God bless us all. But my experience is that bliss and everything else are all together in this oneness. And in this oneness, there is an extraordinary appreciation, for the what-isness of life, for the yin-yang, the evil and the good, the up and the down, the in and the out, the love and the hate, for the totality. That's what it is. I mean, when I find out that it's more than that, I will come up, can bear the message to you, I will bring it out, I will tell you, yes, you can be free of everything, but it, boy, oh boy, that just hasn't been what I've been experiencing. And I don't even know that I would want that. Because how, you would miss everything. You would miss so much. If it was just turned into, ah, oh, it's so beautiful. I don't want to sit with anybody who tells me that. Because I don't believe it. And if it really is that, it kind of denies everything I know about the universe. But still, that being said, I think there probably is, at some conclusive moment, this, what it feels like to go to sleep at night. I think that's probably what it concludes into. What it feels like when you go to sleep. The dreams stop, the covers come over, the pillow's right there, someone you love is nearby, the sense of enclosure and encapsulation, and there is, why not? But until that happens, enjoy life, because it's got everything else here to enjoy. So, if you're approaching the end of your world, or the end of your life, do it with consciousness and grace and openness and love and clarity and surrender, and say yes instead of no. And be aware of whatever is going to be reborn from the loss of whatever was. Any questions? I got this feeling while I was talking that people are saying, can't he talk about nicer things? Can it be something? Why is he always talking about these dark, heavy things? You know, and it's a good question, but I can only tell you, I can only talk about where I'm at. That's all I can do, where this, what's coming through in the moment. I can't pretend it. I can't give a lecture about possibilities. I can't talk theory and philosophy and other things. This is what's going on, and if it's not something you want to hear, turn to another channel. You know, you can watch reruns of Seinfeld, and trust me, those are worth watching. But if you want to sit in some kind of one person's truth, that's what's happening.
I just want to say I so appreciate your authenticity and the authenticity.
This thing that speaks is authentic.
A lot of coping mechanisms that have developed are burning away right now. And one of them is seeking hope and joy and peace. And
yeah, that's a hard one to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. You got to lose. You got to give up hope and seeking joy and all that stuff. You have to let it go. And it is a coping mechanism. We have endless coping mechanisms. We are the most brilliant designers of coping mechanisms ever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what human beings do. We find these amazing ways to deny what is.
Mm-hmm.
And not even to live in what is, for whatever reason. And it's a mistake. It's a problem. Because what is so much richer than what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the dreams and dramas and all these things we have are just phenomenal. And I'm watching a lot of people who are moving into the death of their world, who are looking everywhere but at it. And I don't know what to say to them, except I'm trying to soften the blow where I can for people I know who are facing this.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help them look at it a little bit. If you can just look at it a little bit every day, it starts to become more real. The denial of it means you are one day going to go like that. And you hit that thing I talked about last week, that hard wall of reality. And there's no getting back from that. And it's not a happy space to arrive at. And what I talked about last week, the hard reality and the soft reality, what we're really learning here is soft reality. How to permeate the hard reality with this thing called presence. Because presence is eternal and infinite, and it doesn't obey the laws of hard reality. It just is. And when you can find presence in your life, and you can find this capacity to be real, you're going to watch all this other stuff fall away, but what's left is still this presence. And it's presence without any amplifying anything. It's just pure, absolute reality. And that's who we are. It's what we are. And you have to allow everything else to go. Everything. And it will take everything. And it will do it in a way where you either go, oh God, oh God, oh God, which is what I've been doing much of the week, or you go, yep, there it goes. Every bit of comfort, every bit of solace, every bit of hope, and there you are. But what's amazing about there you are is there you are. And if you get story out of the picture, which is really the thing that's causing the suffering, if you get story out of the picture, it's like, I am. You know, the great I am. I am that. I am that very truth, that very reality, that very eternal, essential being that is all there is. And that's all I am. And I am that. That's what comes. But you got to get all the other pieces burned away.
Yeah.
What a job.
And then, like, behind a lot of the stuff, there's a darkness that doesn't want to be here. And, like, there have been coping mechanisms to you know, not go to that place. And so there's been a presence to, like, wow, okay, there's no fighting anymore.
Well, I'm one of those people who, you know, in the what you call the awakened community, who talks about the darkness. And
yeah.
People go, no, don't talk about the darkness. We want to just be in light. But I, you know, great, if you can pull that off, be in light. But it's the light and the darkness, and in the end, they kind of, I can't say they cancel each other out, but they become a whole, and that whole is us. And if you want one or just one or the other, you're not gonna, I mean, I'm talking in absolutes that I, this is the absolute that I know now. That's all I can say. And as far as I can tell, light and dark are a whole part of the whole, and you have to know both to be complete. And if you know that, you will find the liberation is not a liberation from one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It is liberation into the acceptance of the complete package.
Yeah. There's been a real liberation to not fight it or cover it up.
Exactly. And it comes in, and, you know, I invited the darkness into my life. I've talked about that on earlier talks because it came up in such a big way. And I've described how I started singing to it. You know, I started singing, you know, "Hello Darkness, My Old Friend." And I said, "Come on, you're welcome in." Well, it's come in. And it is intense. It is intense, but it's doing its number. It's really Shiva. Shiva is the destroyer, the Lord of destruction. Rudi, our teacher, Rudra is his Hindu name. Rudra is the tough side of destruction. It's the real heavy duty side. And what Rudi is doing and Rudra is doing is slash and burn and get rid of everything. It's not fun. It's not fun, but it's liberating. It is wildly hard and wildly liberating. And I'm just grateful for the process. I don't like it. But Rumi got me through part of this week because he's such a great poet and gets everything I'm talking about. You know, and he really gets it. I've talked about this a lot. You know, the garbanzo bean and the fire say, burn me, make me soft and mushy and whatever I'm supposed to be, release the flavor that I am and free me from being a contained little dry garbanzo bean. And that's what we're being. We're being used well. We're being mushed up. Our flavor's being released. We're becoming ourselves. And that's what it's all about. We're becoming a perfect example and expression of what we are. It's such a beautiful thing to have happen. But it's hard. And look for people to help you, because they're there. Look, read Rumi. You can hear these talks with many other people. I love Adi Ashanti. I love Eckhart. I mean, there's so many great people. Nisargadatta. You know, there's great people talking about this stuff. Go to them. Or just sit down by yourself or find yourself being sat down, which happens, and let this truth express itself, because it does. And you will be fine. You will go, aha, aha. Until you're not. You know, then you'll do it again. And you'll do it again until you become established in this elemental need to be deeply, quietly present, and not caught in all the stuff that goes on. And that becomes the final liberation. You're just, thy will be done. It's really, that's what it's that simple. Thy will be done. Anyone else?